My name is Alec Ntshavelele. I'm the chairperson of the Standing Committee on Higher Education and all the fireworks at the three. In the NCOP, one person chairs about five committees. So we will do introduction first, and then from there we'll go into the program. I've already said who I am, and now we'll give over to the members to introduce themselves.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. My name is Marian Shekele.
My name is Nokuzo Nagomuleni from Eastern Cape. My name is Otomanika from Pumalanga.
Maluni Longi Kamogumule Baha from Mehauke.
San Malangi Kamarango Simbi and Lutsoli from KZN.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Dalmai Christian from the Northern Cape.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Rukiswa Franz. I'm the committee assistant of the committee. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members, department. My name is Investor Pile, the researcher for the committee. Thank you.
Molweni ngentsasa, ngiphalamende ne-colleagues. Ngigama ngulindo umzi komme ichawe umdanga sasafile malanga nkosi yami uyinza azanzo. Yabule, enkosi.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Noglunga Sithwale from the Parliamentary Monetary Group and the Parliament Monitor.
Morning, Chairperson and honorable members. I'm Lulama Mbobo. I'm the DDG for Corporate Services in the department.
Good morning, honorable members. I am Aruna Singh and I'm the acting DDG for TV.
Good morning, my name is Lucien Kearns. I'm the acting CFO of the department.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Wes Conde from the Department of Higher Education and Training. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Faisal Tuffy. I'm the Chief Directing Officer of the Department.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members, and Zubair Christopher Moshesheba from the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Morning, Chair. Morning, honorable members. Marshall Bima Bizela, Chief Director, responsible for University Education.
Good morning, honorable members, and everyone else. Mbuisi, Matukama, Executive Officer, International Affairs Fund, Department of Higher Education.
Good morning, my name is Kevin Luis. I'm the acting CFO to the Office of the DG.
Thank you very much. We'll move into apologies, if there are any apologies. There are no written apologies, so in this meeting we don't take verbal apologies. So no one apologizes for this for an attendance. And this meeting is a continuation. We're studying where we left last time. There were outstanding questions that we members asked. For instance, we wanted more detail on issues. We are all new members in this committee. I think all of us are new, and that there are lots of gaps in terms of information and knowledge on what the department is doing. And there are lots of acronyms that are used, and if you are not from this sector, it will take you quite some time to follow the discussion. And by the time you understand what this thing means, it's something totally different from what you thought it is. So as you give your input, please make sure that you explain these things, and you know, you don't take anything for granted. Start from the beginning. We, as the committee, we're striving to have a relationship with the Committee on Higher Education in the National Assembly to ensure that there are no gaps in terms of information and knowledge. You can have information, but if that information is, if you don't understand what the details of what this thing is all about, it will just remain information. It doesn't change into knowledge. It doesn't increase your capacity to understand things and interact with them. So please start from the beginning. Don't take anything for granted. We are adults here, and in adult education, they say, you start from the beginning. You don't take things for granted. I'll give over to the department to brief us on the questions that we asked, and thanks for giving us this information on time. We really appreciate that, because it gives us time to even talk amongst ourselves about what are the issues here. I'll give over to the department. But by 12 o'clock, we should be done, because we have a 12:30 meeting to go to, some of us, not all. So I'll give over to the head of the delegation.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, honorable members, staff and colleagues in the department. Yeah, Chair, you're correct that this is a follow-up meeting on the presentation that we made earlier on. And in that meeting, quite a number of comments as well as questions were posed to the department. And it was agreed then that in respect to those issues that were raised, we would have to put them in writing and send all of the issues that sought clarification, and also amplify on the comments that were made by the honorable members of this committee that were done, and we then followed up by honoring this request to come and present in respect to the issues that were raised. There, of which this is what we will be doing, taking the members through the summary of the responses to the questions posed by the committee. I want to say also upfront that we are really honored to interact with you as leaders of the country, as well as leaders of the Department of Higher Education and Training. And we are looking forward to tapping and learning a lot from various aspects of your experiences that you possess. And we will also ensure that on the task that you commission us onto, we don't fail you to the best of our ability. I would request Chief Mabizela to quickly take us through the presentation, and the is mindful of the time constraint without leaving anything, of course, that is contained in the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DJ, and thank you, Chair. I will go straight to the questions that were asked, and taking into cognizance what you said, Chair, about not taking things for granted. Well, I'll do my best. The first question was on the development of academics. How do you, as the department, plan to ensure that you meet the market rate to retain staff at the universities? Let me just explain in the form of background that all the universities, all 26 of them, they have councils, and each employee of that university is employed by the council. And the council of that university will set up salary scales, and they may not be exactly the same as the other 25 universities, so they would differ completely. And it starts and it ends their chair. The department has no influence on the salaries that the institution pay. Neither the department gets consulted when such scales are set up by the institution. But we responded to the question at any rate because there is some work that we are doing, and that is in based on our studies of the system, that there are aging academics in the system, and that some institutions also struggle to have transformation, implementing transformation in terms of employment of their professionals, the academics. And so we started this program called the Staffing South Africa's Universities, and that's the first bullet there on the response, which has got six sub-programs in it. And then the first one being the New Generation of Academics Program, or the NGAP. So next time when we speak about NGAP chair, that will be the acronym that you'll know that it means New Generation of Academics. Universities each year are invited to apply for the NGAP post, and a minimum of 100 posts are allocated per year, so 100 for all the 26 universities. So some universities would have about four, some would have two or three or whatever in whichever department that the institution has or faculty. And some universities do top up, and the top up would be, for instance, for every 10 posts that the NGAP provides, then the university will say, we will provide another 10, which they will fund from their coffers. And so, and this program has been working well. This is about the fourth year now the program works. And what it means today is that the Department of Higher Education and Training pays for those, pays salaries of those academics for the first 6 years. And then the university, on the seventh year moving forward, the university should have regularized the post and made it permanent and take over the salaries of the NGAP appointments. And the scale is based on what the university has decided and not what the department has. The appointed lecturers are supported to undertake master's, doctorate, on postdoctoral studies, depending on the entering qualification. The appointed academics are put in a structured development program that includes funds to contribute towards registration for doctoral or PhD studies. And 80% of the appointments are required to be black and or women. As I said, Chair, this is also meant to balance transformation or to meet transformation targets of the institution. The second component of the Southern South Africa University is the University Staff Doctoral Program. The NGAP, the one that I've just spoken about, is meant to get in new and young academics into the system. So the University Staff Doctoral Program is meant to get those who are in the system to get their qualification. Particularly doctoral programs. So academics and professional staff at South African universities are supported to undertake and complete doctoral studies within a period of 4 years or less, and a PhD would take 3 years minimum. And a total per capita amount of 500,000 is allocated per academic staff member, supported through the USDP. And that means every year the department will pay 500,000 for that academic one once that academic has registered for their PhD studies. So the USDP scholars should benefit from joint supervision or course supervision opportunities between South African and international universities. And phase one, South Africa and US partnership, and phase two, the South Africa and UK partnership. And the USDP scholars are afforded a mobility opportunity abroad for exposure and for development. And 80% of the appointments are required to be black and all women candidates. And then thirdly, the Future Professors Program, this is still falling under Staffing South Africa's universities. The Future Professors Program, you are employed at the university, you've got a PhD, you've been working as an academic at the university, but you are not yet there in terms of professorship, which means that you haven't done or you are struggling to do research. It could be for many reasons, or and also supervision of PhD candidates. And so this is meant, therefore, to promote those academics into professorship, which means at least you would be able to do the two, supervision of PhD candidates and conducting research. In the FPP, Future Professors Program, three cohorts of 28 promising lecturers or senior lecturers from across the 26 universities are recruited and supported towards appropriate national research fund ranking and eligibility for professor appointments through a structured intensive program. Let me explain this, Chair. You cannot be appointed as a professor. It's your colleagues in your sector, in your area of specialization, that would recognize you as a professor and think that you are at the level where you can be a major professor. So what we do as the department is to get you the tools and to give you the tools so that you can be eligible for among your colleagues to appoint you as a professor. So there is no guarantee on this. We look for the potential, and there's no guarantee that you will become a professor indeed, but it should be your colleagues. And when I mean colleagues, it will be, if for instance you are working on electrical engineering and you conduct research in that area, so your colleagues in that area, other specialists in electrical engineering, will recognize you that you are an expert, and with your knowledge and the work that you have done in the sector, then you should be honored to be a professor, and therefore that would be the decision that they make. So we give you the tools so that you become eligible. So those 28 promising lecturers, three cohorts of 28, so this was the first one this year, it will be the next cohort next year, and so on. The program includes international mobility for 6 months with a leading scholar in the field, a seminar attendance, and lecturer replacement.
This is very good. It's like meeting under a bridge. Am I the only one who is present?
Yeah.
I'm from Limpopo, so my I'm designed for solar energy.
No, thanks. Sorry about that. That's okay, Chair. I can guarantee, Chair, it was not our plan to make any call. So 80% again of the appointments are required to be black and women candidates. What we do, Chair, you'll keep getting this line of 80%. If the university doesn't get those numbers, they don't appoint, simple as that, for that post until they get a black or a woman candidate. So for all these programs, the ones that I've already referred to, and this one as well as the next ones. And then the fourth one, the other three programs include Nurturing Emerging Scholars Program to be implemented in 2020, next year. Existing Academics Staff Capacity Development Program, and the Higher Education Leadership and Management Program. Those other two are already in place. On the leadership and management, we're working with University of South Africa to train up-and-coming middle managers at universities, and again, make them eligible for appointment for senior positions at the university. The second question was international scholarship coordination by the department. Is this the role given to the department to carry out across government? So our response, Chair, during June 2018, Cabinet approved that in relation to the international bursaries or study opportunities, the Minister of Higher Education and Training develops a strategy to deal with the coordination and management of opportunities and develop an information repository. So even that bullet already answers the chair is the responsibility for across government that the Department of Higher Education and Training is doing in terms of international scholarships. Some are offered by those countries, but some are sought by the by our government departments from outside funders. So the department has established an international scholarships forum to which all provincial governments and national departments have been invited to nominate representatives. Sorry about that grammar. The forum meets biannually, and three meetings have been held to date. So that is from June of 2018, June last year. And then the third question, what is the status of guidelines for international scholarships? With input from forum representatives, the department has developed draft national guides for coordination and implementation of international scholarships. The final draft has been distributed to all representatives of the forum for further comment and is intended to be submitted to the minister for approval by end of 2019. And the guidelines outline the priorities and purpose of international scholarships, roles and responsibilities, lines of communication, coordination within government, and the fundamental principles of implementation of international scholarships programs. And the guidelines aim to provide tools to plan for and assess scholarship opportunities to ensure that they add value to contribute to the country's development objectives and strengthening South African government resources allocated to international scholarships. And in fact, here we are mainly guided by the NDP because the NDP does provide where are we lacking as a country in terms of skills, and therefore where can we benefit for the country when we send our scholars outside the country. And also to guide the department, the government departments, in terms of where those skills are required. And so when they negotiate for mobility of the scholars, they would be targeting the areas where South Africa is short. So the other line there says the challenges within the NSFAS seem to remain many in spite of the interventions by the department. The fact that NSFAS contributes to the continues to be under administration is a concern. The approach adopted, which allows students to get funding directly into their accounts, is what it is. So, Chair, we mainly the what NSFAS focuses on is undergrad, and what the departments, other government departments, and provincial provinces would often be either at postgraduate level or maybe just a short certificate for training in that particular area to get the expertise and so on. So that would be the case here, that maybe some of the scholarships are not located, for instance, with the NSFAS. Then the fourth question, how does the department monitor the use of money given directly to students to ensure that it is spent for the right purpose by students? And B, how is the student throughput rate affected by this? C, is there a plan to place to ensure that the NSFAS is efficient? And D, is the department happy with the way NSFAS is operating currently? we've made our attempt on this one also to the best of our ability. There are significant improvements in NSFAS operation since it was placed under administration in August 2018. Which means that we've just finished a year with NSFAS being under administration. Students are now receiving allowances earlier in the academic year than ever before. So when a student registers in February with the universities and the TVET colleges, the students would be receiving that their funds. So as to assist them with their books and so on, living expenses, when I say so on. Although challenges continue to be experienced at NSFAS, and at institutions, particularly relating to exchange of data, these are being addressed. The department is committed to work with institutions and NSFAS to ensure the efficient administration of student funding and to work towards a stable NSFAS for the long term. We've had very little this year compared to other years, Chair, in terms of students submitting complaints or protesting against NSFAS. And of course, the idea is actually not to have those at all. So we're working towards that. The minister will appoint a team to conduct review of the NSFAS business processes, which will also make recommendations for areas of improvement within NSFAS. And the department is in discussion with NSFAS and institutions about a student funding policy and how to best ensure that funding is provided to support students. This is work in progress, Chair, whichever way you want to look at it. We can't have a situation at the end where we are going to say that, yes, we have arrived, because as you could see in the questions, some of the questions are asking whether they will follow the money and see if the student, if it makes impact. And so that work actually means, therefore, that, you know, we have to be looking at it progressively. Again, I will remind Chair and the honorable members, the last year was the first year of implementation of what they call free education. So it was the first year. We are right at the beginning of this. 2019 is the second year, so it's still too early for some of these. And then the committee commended the department for increasing the capacity of women in the education and academic space. This will be monitored on an ongoing basis. And of course, we have commended that all the staff capacity development programs, as you have seen in the previous slides, implemented by the department ensure that 80% of the beneficiaries must be black and women. However, the USDP, in particular, 50% of the candidates must be women. And question six, what is happening with fee-free education? Are we achieving this? How far are we? What is the plan and progress on the plan? I think part of that question I've already intimated on it. The department has been rolling out the BHET bursary scheme from 2018 to support students from poor and working class backgrounds or families earning less than 350 per annum combined income. And the students who were first time entering undergraduate in 2018 and 2019 are receiving fully subsidized funding, which includes tuition fees and support for living expenses. And the bursary is being provided through the NSFAS in collaboration with universities. The focus here would be on universities, Chair, because at TVET colleges, the issue was a bit different already, even before the declaration of fee-free education. With the TVET colleges, if you qualify for NSFAS, basically, you would be receiving or studying for free. And then number seven, the comment, the committee wants to follow the money to the beneficiaries in respect of universities, TVET colleges, and artisan development. And the response, in as far as the universities, the funding to universities is monitored through reporting regulations which require universities to submit audited financial statements and an annual report every June. So universities submit those audited statements. And earmarked funds are monitored through progress reports and audit reports submitted by the universities and through oversight visits to universities. Now, if I can, Chair, again, following what you said earlier on of not taking things for granted, the funding that goes to universities is in two components. One is baseline funding. So the universities can decide what they do with that money. That's where they also take for salaries. And then the other component is earmarked funding. So earmarked, it's meant for a specific purpose. For example, it will be money for infrastructure. And sometimes it's not just any infrastructure, it would be infrastructure for residences, student residences, or a particular laboratory or a particular lecture theater. So that would be the earmark fund, and that money gets audited for that project and that project only, and not in the same way as the baseline fund is provided to the institutions. So in our funding statements, and even the CEO when he reports, when he reports on funding to universities, there will always be those two components, one earmark and the other one the baseline to the institutions. So in terms of the funding on skills development, the department through the National Skills Authority, NSA, completed the National Skills Development Strategy 3, NSDS 3, evaluation study for the period 2011 to 2016, which revealed, among others, that 1.3 million learners benefited from various skills development interventions with a throughput rate of 77%. And 80% employers surveyed for the same period revealed that training increases productivity, while 74% increases work readiness. A detailed report is available as released during the occasion of the National Skills Conference held on 14 March 2019. That is a detailed report on that study and the impact that the skills training are doing on the system. DG, I don't know whether you want me to continue on the TVET or you would want to, all of them. Okay, great. Now, number eight comment, lack of certification is a concern in TVET colleges. The department to report on outstanding certificates, especially at exit levels. So our response is that the department is dependent on reports from the from CETA on the certification backlog. As you would know, Chair and Honourable Members, that's the state IT agency, and the department works with CETA on the production of certificates for the TVET colleges particularly. In December 2018, this figure was estimated at 15,000, and the department has a dedicated task team working on the backlog. And again, maybe just to give a bit of context here, is that the production of certificates for the TVET colleges is an ongoing process every month. So it's not like, for instance, the NSC, where you would write exams at the end of the year and then the production of certificates happens for those, or supplementary examinations in March and then production of certificate happens for those. With the TVET colleges, you would always get exams throughout the course of the year. And the comment number nine, throughput rates are not good, especially at N4 level, consequently affecting the number of artisans that are produced. And our response is that artisans will typically only do a theory component of the college, and the apprenticeship in the workplace. Although throughput rates must be improved, one of the large constraints in the artisan development is the number of workplaces prepared to host apprentices, because you don't complete your apprenticeship if you have not had the experience of workplace. Number 10 question, student placement rates. A, how does this happen? B, what are the replacement rates? What are the placement rates? And see what is the role of student support services in placement of students. So our response, and this is regard to TVET indeed, student support services assist students to find work placements. Now, however, it is not a requirement of the college to source work placements for students. And some colleges have strong relationships with the industry and will typically approach those partners for placements, and the placement rates vary across colleges and is not something the DHAT keeps record of. And generally speaking, colleges struggle to find work placements. And of course, you can imagine with campuses that are placed in rural areas and with no close by industry. And they will struggle more than those that are located in the urban areas where you'll find industry. And number 11, the committee is happy that the department is increasing the development of artisans. The department is expected to report on the production of artisans. And comment is noted indeed, but we further elaborated that the department, as part of its drive to promote artisanal trade, launched the Decade of Artisan from 2014 to 2024, and also participated in the World Skill Competition at Kazan, Russia on 22 to 28 August 2019. We can give you details of how we performed there later on. The department has recently conducted a tracer study for the artisan for the artisans found competent in the 2017-18 financial year, where 77% of 21,151 artisans were found to be employable, and 74% employed and 3% self-employed. A total of 4,290 individuals successfully interviewed from the sample of 7,286 from the total of 21,151 artisans were found competent in the 2017-18 financial year. And number 12, it was a question, what is the role of CETAs to take up community education initiatives? Is this happening? And indeed, our response here, the broadening of the scope of CET, that is community education and training, I had a comment about when the colleague was introducing himself, that is from CET branch, that is Community Education and Training Colleges. To provide skills training required requires the necessary competence by lecturers, appropriate infrastructure and equipment to provide accredited programs. The expanded scope has not led to the additional allocation of the baseline for the CET colleges. In various CETAs, Mining Qualifications Authority, that's one CETA, Education, Training and Development Practices, Wholesale and Retail, Fiber Processing and Manufacturing Services, Agriculture, Construction, are assisting the colleges to introduce skill training. Those are some of the CETAs that are involved in the training of college CET college lecturers. Areas of funding support have been on governance and management training, the training of lecturers, the provision of equipment, and possible use of skill centers constructed by the CETAs. So that explains the involvement of the CETAs in terms of the training of training that takes place at the community education and training colleges. So comment number 13, send the list of 54 community learning centers, the names of responsible persons, etc., in order for oversight visits to be arranged. The list has been sent to the committee as requested. Hopefully you will be able to confirm. And then 14, CET colleges must do recognition of prior learning and retrain the job, retrain in the job. For example, in mining communities. And our response here, the nature of recognition of prior learning and retraining that CET colleges can be undertaken, but requires the necessary capacity and systems to be put in place. We can give details of those requirements here. And through partnerships with skills development partners, including TVET colleges, and the Quality Council for Trade and Occupation, retraining for communities is possible. The CET Center Plan provides an incremental approach to building the capacity and the CET colleges, of the CET colleges to massively provide skills in communities. This is partly in what you said about learning, that's partly taking care of that this sector. And 15, what is the vacancy rate? And B, by when will vacant positions be filled? And our response there is that there are 1,683 vacancies across the department, including colleges. It takes 6 months to fill vacant posts. The current period is 164 days. Again, we can provide detail there, but just to say that it's not just the head office that we are talking about here, it's also the colleges, because the department is responsible for the employees at the colleges. Then 16, a need to visit the department and to interact with the broader department as well. The comment is noted, and indeed, Chair, that will be most welcome. If you can be alerted in advance, we'll be able to do the necessary preparations. The comment 17, an explanation to be provided why such a big portion of the budget is allocated to universities compared to TVET colleges. And so the response, the allocation to universities and TVET colleges is based on student enrollment. That's one component and not entirely just that one. And the funding of a student at university is higher than that of a student at a TVET college. That's another explanation of it, and the facilities required by these institutions also differs. You would need more facilities at universities, and therefore, you know, more funding would go there. If you think of laboratories and so on, then you would require at the TVET colleges. But of course, the issue is that we are increasing capacity of the TVET colleges. We are even increasing the numbers, the capacity in terms of the infrastructure, but also the numbers of students that get enrolled at the TVET colleges. The target is to have more students enrolled at the TVET colleges than you have at the universities, and that's how it should go, and that is how our education system, PSET system, post-school education and training system, will be more effective for our economy than it is at the moment, when we have more students in the TVET colleges than we have at universities. And then 18 was a comment, for future presentations and reports, avoid using abbreviations. Members are still getting used to the acronyms of the department. Chair, you will get there. We'll try our best indeed to try and explain these acronyms. Number 19, for future presentations and reports, when statistics are presented in percentages, actual figures should be provided. Indeed, Chair, we agree with that. And as you can see, you could see very little percentages, except where, you know, in the cases where we would say it's obvious that we have to use the percentages. For instance, where we say 80% should be black and women, we think that you would understand. But where we're using other hard numbers, then we have tried to avoid that. Chair, that is the end of the presentation as we had prepared it. I will give back to DG. Maybe some colleagues may want to add something. Thank you, sir.
No, thank you very much. It's quite sufficient in responding to the issues that the members of the committee have actually raised for the attention of the department, and we always see this engagement as not one-off but the continuing process. So we are in your hands, Jen. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. I found this both documents because I've got the slide and the other document. As you were talking to this, I was reading the main document that was there, and I find it very, very useful. And thanks for, you know, for breaking everything, you know, the way we said. Information is, when it's nicely packaged, it becomes easier, for instance, to understand and digest some of the things. I've got some, thank you very much. The honorable members, this is the presentation. I just want to check with the skilling of upskilling of academics, what is referred to as transformation. Or I don't know what transformation means. Does it mean having black people, or does it deal also with the quality of what we are giving to our people, because I think transformation should go beyond the color coding. It's necessary now to look at color coding, but I think we should look at it again, even in terms of the quality. The degrees that we're offering in South Africa, in line with what the world is it's giving out there, the developed world or the developing world. Can I move from a university in Limpopo and be accredited in the US or in England, let's say, if I was doing second year BCom and my family moves to London, can I go and do second year in the London School of Economics or any other university? Will they recognize, you know, what is the value of what we, you know, of what do I get, of what do I get, or what we are receiving from our universities? The other thing I'd like to check is we've got a past, we've got a history that we cannot ignore in this country. There are traditionally what is called white universities, that is Beaufort, Stellenbosch, you name them. And there are still issues even now, I don't know whether this is anecdotal evidence or whatever, but what we get from the newspapers towards at the beginning of the academic year, there will be issues of registration and admittance of students in some of the universities. And that you'll have VETs or OUCT having more white staff in terms of lecturers and administration and even students. Now this 80%, what does it do to these universities? Does it mean that if there are fewer blacks, these universities will not benefit from this? I just want to check. How do we navigate that one? And I'm sure that we are not leaving other people behind.
No, thank you very much.
But what we're going to do, we'll just take questions, and then after that, you just note them. These are my comments, and then other members will comment, and then after that, we'll move over to the team to educate us more. And the other one would be, you know, there are rumors of corruption in NSFAS. I can't put my pulse on it and say, yes, in fact, there was a case of fraud by so-and-so and so-and-so in NSFAS. I just want to check. Aren't the, how far true is this, that there are allegations of mismanagement and corruption? And if these are true, what has the department done to follow those up and to recoup the monies that were misused, if there is any? What action is taken? Our work as members of parliament is oversight. And sometimes when you ask questions to the department, they'll say, oh, it was an oversight on our part. Oversight is played this side. With you is the PFMA. There cannot be an oversight on the part of the managers. It's a, let's say, the management, we can say we did not apply our minds to this. That is the kind of language we'd like to hear. We did not apply our minds to this, or we did, and in fact, these are the actions that are going to be taken. This would be, here we're dealing with rumors and issues, and we want to, a rumor must be said, dismissed as a rumor. No, it's just a rumor, and you assure us that there are no such issues of corruption. And if you are not sure, just say we are not sure, and we will investigate, and we'll understand. We are not difficult people, because we are helping here to build the country, and actually the interest is more on development of this country economically, academically, socially, and again even to fight crime. since crime started, if there is crime in universities, then we are dead. Because if people steal in universities, then what kind of student, what kind of, you know, what kind of society are we building? Yeah, I'll say so that I don't give other members a chance to comment and ask questions. Yeah, we'll just go this way. Honorable Gideon, and then followed by the by Dongeni, and then we'll go through that.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the department for the brief answer of the question. Chairperson, I've got two questions. My first one is on question 12. Maybe the department will see this as a new question, but 2 weeks ago there was a program on TV regarding an allegation in services CETA, and it was about the Limpopo University. And I think as this committee, the department must give us a report on that one because it's in the public eye and people are asking questions and we don't have answers. If we can have an update on that allegation that was made of young students was recruited into this and a professor of the Limpopo University and his daughter and his wife has reaped the benefits of this project. Then the issue of your 80% is a very good concept, but I think we need an outline. If you talk about the 80% and you talk about specifically about women, and we are in this era of gender-based violence and the patriarchy that must fall teaching, especially in our province. Can you give us the reassurance that women won't only be used to fill an 80% gap, but not in senior management? Because what we are experiencing when it comes to the empowerment of women, we are just tick the box. But when it comes to the senior position, women are still at the far end of the hierarchy. So the other issue is that this department is not using, like certain departments are talking about women and then it is just a promotion of white women. How are we going to bring that all together in the 80%? Thank you. Okay, thanks, Chair.
Our committee whip. We pass into line.
Okay. Thanks, Sally, some of the response of the questions. It's fine, it's okay, we understand somewhere, somehow. But there's just little thing I want to know, and I want to do follow up in my chairperson. When I'm enrolled in Eastern Cape, and I go to Mpumalanga, here in South Africa, not in overseas, does the system talk to each other? Because I do first year in Eastern Cape and I allocate to Mpumalanga. I go to TVET colleges. Does the system talk to each other? If not, is there any plan to do that? because it may so happen that I can, they can give me the bursary, and then I failed. I decided to go Mpumalanga, and in Mpumalanga they again give me the bursary. So I'm not helping the department or the government. So that's why I'm asking, but the system is to talk to each other. The second one, I'm going to say it's a rumor, because I can't say it's no good one. On CETA, I'm not quite sure about CETA, because CETA was supposed to help students, né? But we are in the same class. One get 800, one get 200, and the money is from the pocket of Nobuzon. I don't think it's supposed to be like that. Can you please help us, guys, especially in Eastern Cape? Start from Batawen, Aidutwa, Umtata, Libode, and so on. About CETA, I don't know whether you have nothing, but you're supposed to have that. And I don't know, it's a room. I can't say it's a room. But if you can do the follow up and go to the students, I'm sure you're going to do better. The third one, can you please give us the time frame in Tibet colleges? At least Tibet colleges must be recognized, guys. Because those students are in universities. Hey, they are so high. And our children want to go to university, not to Tibet colleges. At least, can you please try and tell us the time frame to be on the same level? Whether it's not exactly, but at least they must be recognized. Thanks, sir.
I hope you're not planning to relocate to England when you made a static reference to England. Chair, firstly, I think we should commend the department for coming back and coming back with the issues that were raised as a committee in terms of the time constraints that we had when we were engaging. It's commendable. I think that the questions were captured accordingly as we were raising them. But for me, Chair, just a few points that I want to raise. One, I think taking from what Honorable Ndongeni just raised about Tibet colleges, I think somehow we were able to contain protests around student registrations, applications during the beginning of the year. If you recall, in the recent past, there would be stampedes where students wanted to be accommodated in different institutions. And I think one of the key things that the minister emphasized at the time, and that was to say that let's give our youth an opportunity to exploit Tibet College in order to lessen the burden on universities as it is. But I think for me, it's important for the department to put more emphasis on making Tibet colleges more sexy and attractive. Yes, sexy, that's the language that our youth understand. Because there's always a conversation. When I was still at Fort Hare then, a student from Vets would see himself or herself better than us because we're from a rural university. But we're boasting about our history there. But I think the main thing is that at this point, whoever goes to a TVET is seen as inferior to someone who goes to a university. And for me, that then says the department must do something more drastic that would make sure that TVET colleges are attractive and are seen as institutions that can be able to assist and give more options to our youth when they pursue post-high school studies. Secondly, Chairperson, still on, or let me move to LSPAS. I don't know what experiences other people might have, but I've come across learners in certain retail stores who would approach us individually to say that, are you paying cash or with a card? If you're paying cash, can I pay for you using my card and you then give me the cash? That's how this thing is. I've experienced it firsthand. It's not something that I heard somewhere. I know TUT students do that around Pretoria. I don't know with other areas. Which says that there's still some monitoring mechanisms that have to be used to kind of tighten all the controls for money to be utilized for the purposes that it was meant for. So these approaches are minimal. It might be difficult to control, but I think something must be done to kind of contain the situation. The other one, Chairperson, is NSFAS under administration. How long do we envisage this to go on? At what point, maybe, do we think that we would want to have stability in terms of administration so that, you know, there's now a responsibility given to someone who will take NSFAS to where we would want it to be? The other one, Chairperson, the issue of certification backlog by CETA. I noted that on the presentation that there was a mention of about 15,000 as of 2018 towards the end. It would have been important or great to understand how far are we in breaking the back of that backlog at this point to see if we are making progress or not. But if we don't, because remember, if we are saying that we would want to elevate the level of our TVET colleges, certification should also form part of trying to make sure that we make TVET colleges attractive. And the last one on TVET, the issue of placement of learners for practical training. I think that maybe we must look at options that are available to us, whether we pair TVET in terms of certain disciplines with some of our CETA, to see if, for instance, if MER CETA can assist in terms of engineering and say that how can they assist TVET in trying to place learners within their employers who are members of their specific sectors. Probably that would assist in ensuring that in the end we get an artisan that is fully fledged, having gone through the theory and also had the kind of workplace experience that is required for them to gain employment. And the other one, Chairperson, on CETA, I think I noted also on the presentation that NSDS3, if I'm not mistaken, has just taken place around March and so on. It would be important to note whether, in terms of the unemployed learners that are enrolled with our CETAs, whether we are making an impact in ensuring that those who come out of the system are able to get jobs out of training that they would have acquired. Because then, if we train people to hold unemployment cards at intersections, it would mean that money that is used in terms of skills development, especially on the unemployed, would not be giving us what we expected us to provide in the end, given our high employment rate, especially around young people. The last one, Chairperson, is on the vacancy, the high vacancy rate. I think that the vacancy rate, as reported in this presentation, is high. And for me, if you have that, it kind of limits your capacity in what you can do, because there's a vacancy there, there's someone acting, and that acting person also has his or her own responsibilities that he or she was employed for, and therefore, when you can't hold that person completely accountable, because you have given extra responsibilities on what the person was employed for, which means that maybe you must look at how we can kind of expedite filling of vacancies, so that can increase our capacity and make sure that our overall objectives as a department are somewhat met. Chairman, those were my few comments, but I think that I welcome the report as presented, and I take the point from the DG that this is an ongoing process of engagement and monitoring whether we're making progress or not, and that members of Parliament are able to play their oversight role, but also come up with prompt proposals of how to improve for the betterment of our country. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Baya. Honorable Baha. Honorable Lutu.
Thank you, Chair. Good things to you once again. I think one should really thank the department for coming back to us, and the information before us is really helpful. And I was going to say so much, but then my colleague here, he spoke for more than an hour and he took all our comments.
I'm giving you an hour.
Thank you, Chairperson. But I don't need it anymore. But the issue of NSFAS, I think one needs to really look close to it, because I feel with the monitoring of this money, what is he saying about Pretoria is also happening in KZN? And it's not about imali, people, they ask for money when you do your groceries. They even go to liquor shops and they buy expensive things. So they wait for this entire money within getting my account up, and then they will start spending it. I think it's also one of the reasons you find students don't have enough textbooks, because the money that is meant for something else, when they use it on something else. So it's really worrying us. There is no close monitoring on this money, because I remember before there was email, when NSFAS was paying, it would pay email direct for inward and for accommodation, and the students then required to touch that money to use it on something else. So I think we need to look or go back to a drawing board to see how do we pay these money to the students. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine will also be short and sweet. I don't want to repeat what my colleagues have said about the book allowance and accommodation allowances that are spent irregularly. So my question is that that has been implemented at the beginning of this year. So what will the department do to monitor the students' pass rate and to see to it that the book allowances did not have a negative effect on the pass rate of students at the end of the year? And should the department find that there has been a negative impact on students' pass rates, what then will they do in the future? Considering that bookstores have been closed, jobs have been lost because students are no longer buying textbooks, and to a large extent not paying their accommodation either. Then I would also like to know, the Deputy Minister said in his reply that TVETs are still administering their own bursaries, and only at universities that the bursaries are being administered through NSFAS. So I'm concerned that should the TVET colleges find out, will that be an issue for you in the future? Would they also not want their textbook allowances to be paid directly to them? Because at the moment, the TVETs are giving them their textbooks in their hands at the beginning of the year, or whatever the case may be. What is the long-term administrative program for McCarthy? Should you find that this trial that you are going through will not work, will that administrative duties perhaps be returned to universities? Is there a possibility of that in the future? Then also the certification at TVET colleges. It was also reported by the Deputy Minister that the certification backlog is actually the college's fault. Excuse me. Due to incorrect coding when they register the students. So my question is, what is the department doing to hold the colleges accountable that when they register students at the beginning of the year that the correct coding is done so that the student is not impacted through incorrect coding and therefore not being certificated at the end of the particular year? Thank you.
Thanks a lot. I nearly said honorable chair. I've been raising my hand for some time. That all of us here, we use cars to travel, to work, from home to work. When we go to shopping, we use cars. And quite a few use public transport. But I don't know of anyone who walks in the bush going to town. But all of us here, we are candidates of disability. All people who are using roads are potential candidates. It can happen today, tomorrow, next week, next year. So when we look at the interest of people of disabilities, we're actually looking at our future interest going ahead. So when we look at this progress of, you know, women, you know, people who were previously disadvantaged, let us also look at the disability program. I like in the future when we discuss this thing of grants and bazaars, how many people with disabilities are likely to have that in our programs going forward. We're not doing it for others, we're doing it for us in the future, because we are candidates for that, all of us. We're voting every day to be on the disability. When you go into your car, anything can happen, not because of your mistake, but because, you know, nature being nature. But going forward, anything statistic that we are given should include disability. I'm going to give over to just an addition from Honorable Gillian. Because some of the issues we are raising are not necessarily questions. It's comments and appreciation that we, you know, when you sit in meetings, you can feel is that the atmosphere of us and them. Now I don't know who is us and who is them. Yeah, it's like a family meeting, briefing one another. This is very comfortable. I'm getting more comfortable. It's not nice. I'll give over to Honorable Gillian.
Thank you, Chairperson. The one issue that I think the department, you don't have to give me an answer, your monitoring and evaluation when it comes to your funding, and I'm specifically referring to the TVET College. Here in Peril is a college, the TVET College, Northern College. The accommodation that is provided for the students is in a very unsafe place. The accommodation is not up to standard, but they are getting their money every month. The students are being robbed in that area if they set foot outside the accommodation. It's in the main road in Peru, and it's very unsafe. And I feel that the landlords is making money out of the department, but not giving the necessary service to the students that they deserve. And I just need to know, how is your monitoring and evaluation, especially when it comes to student accommodation, especially in this time that we are faced with, especially in the Western Cape, where young women are not safe. Then the other one is the international scholarship. You talk about all provinces. Is the Western Cape really part of this discussion? Because students of the Western Cape are never included. Not because they don't want to be included, but because the Western Cape government don't want to share in this program. Are they now on board? The other one is when it comes to the rehabilitation programs in prisons, can the department maybe send us a written report on that program that they are funding in prisons? Because we really need to look into what rehabilitation programs are available for inmates and how are you doing that. Then on your vacancy rate on question 15, you don't give us a plan of how you're going to fill and how you're going to come, because you've got a vacancy of 1,683 across the department. And including colleges, it will take 6 months to fill vacant posts, and the current period is 164 days. Maybe if you can also send us this as a written report, I can check it.
Like I said, maybe some of the things will be in the annual performance plan of the department, but we'll over to you.
No, thank you very much. In respect to the quality of programs that are offered in our institution, once you have got an institution which is offering programs, you have got quality assurance audit. Now, in respect to universities, it's Council on Higher Education. If a university wants to offer a particular program, it has to develop a program and make an application to Council on Higher Education, which we call it CEH, for it to offer that program. Then Council on Higher Education, they then do a proper due diligence, assessing as to whether this program, this institution wants to offer, is it meeting the minimum requirements. For it then to be accredited, it depends which program, but a program for it to be offered in an institution of higher learning, it must have a certain number of professors in the offering of that program, a certain number of associate professors, a certain number of PhD graduates. That is stuck on staffing. Then the other component is the content of the program which is offered. The relevance of the program and its applicability. And if they are certified about all those things, then they grant accreditation for a program to be offered. And on an ongoing basis,
they monitor and evaluate as to whether these programs in all institutions or in each and every institution are still meeting these minimum requirements for them to be offered in an institution as they been accredited. Now, having a program been accredited, it has to be registered on South African Qualification Authority, National Qualification Database, as to what NQF level it is offered. So you meet all those requirements. Get accredited, it gets registered in SAQA database. Now, the quality of offerings of programs in South African universities is world standard. So our students internationally, they are quite comparable in many respects. And quite a number of our universities, in terms of international ranking, they feature quite prominent, but not in the same way because they are quality. Now, the question related to this is the acknowledgement and acceptability of programs amongst and between institutions. An institution has got its own admission requirements. So if you have studied in another institution and you are moving to register in an institution, normally no institution would allow you to register at a third year level for a 3-year degree because they have to maintain the status of their degree. It's not transferable to that institution. You normally start at the second year level. But what we have done as a department was to engage with institutions with a view of aligning articulation. Articulation meaning that if you are doing, for instance, physical science in one university, level one, there should be a similarity between the offerings of that program such that if you decide to go to another institution, it gets recognized. That is articulation. So we've worked and our institution has come along quite very well in respect to that. So that is the quality of offering in our university. Up to standard. TVET colleges. TVET colleges, it's more easier in them because the programs that they are offering are determined at a national level. Its quality, program offerings, you know, everything. Mm-hmm. And they are writing a common examination in many subjects from one examination center. So the question of articulation, it's more expressed in TVET colleges than at universities, because universities are having their own examination authority, but in TVET colleges there is one examination authority. But TVET colleges are allowed to develop some other programs to respond to local or regional needs or needs of particular industries, because they would, some industries would come to a college and say, no, we want a training in this particular program so that we can be able to improve our productivity in there. So a college is allowed that flexibility as well as our institution. But the question of the quality of program offering as well as the question of articulation is something that we have worked on and continue working on it to improve its functionality across the system. Now, the second area is in respect to NSFAS. There are quite a number of questions in respect to NSFAS. Firstly, NSFAS at the present moment is receiving funds from government as an entity to administer the disbursement of funds to eligible students, to universities as well as TVET colleges. An eligible student is the one who is from a household whose combined family income is up to 300,000 rand per annum. And your performance academically is up to mark. Then you are assessed, and upon assessment, NSFAS makes a determination as to whether you are eligible or not. And upon them certifying themselves that you are eligible, then you are awarded the bursary attached to certain conditions. You have to sign bursary agreement forms, and you have to perform at a certain minimum required level so that you are able to progress in an institution. Then in the administration, there are various funding components that are taken into consideration. For instance, tuition, learning material, accommodation, which is subsidized, so that students could be able to afford decent accommodation, you know, across. Institutions do have their own accommodation and other facilities they lease or they rent as institutions. And other facilities students do rent themselves. But what we then did in respect to universities is develop minimum norms and standards that every accommodation that a student is leasing or renting should meet. Meaning therefore, if it's a private accommodation, a university has to undertake due diligence and certify that this accommodation indeed it meets minimum norms and standards as set by the Department of Higher Education and Training for students to use facility. So that is applicable, you know, across. But in respect to TVET colleges, the design and the location of universities and TVET colleges is different. TVET colleges are designed and constructed close to communities that they serve. And initially, there wasn't that much consideration for student accommodation. But there are some that do have some pocket of student accommodation. It's only now that we are actually working on this matter because we have seen much demand for student accommodation even in TVET colleges. We're working on that at the present moment. And there's some funding for infrastructure for TVET colleges because it was not there before. It was only for university. But that funding in the main still more confined for the maintenance of the existing infrastructure, refurbishment, as well as equipping more the current lecturing and workshop facilities. Because one of the things, as members have actually pointed out, that the quality and the credibility of programs that are offered in TVET colleges are quite important in addressing the perception of society, because institutions that are regarded as having a more status is university. But the research that we conducted and studies that we conducted are actually showing that in actual fact in the country, we need more graduates at an intermediate level. That is technicians, artisans, and technologists, because they are actually needed, especially in the manufacturing sector of the economy. And these type of skills are mainly the ones that drive the economic performance of each and every country. So there are quite a number of interventions that were undertaken in that respect. For instance, we have identified trades that are quite needed by the economy, certain trades at the present moment. And we have worked with National Skill Fund as well as a sector education and training colleges, for instance, funds to build what we refer to as centers of specialization. These centers of specialization is an intervention that is bringing industry, industry associations, TVET colleges to work on a curriculum or program design that should actually be offered, and also tailor-made this with a dual system of offering, that spending a certain period in theory at a college level and getting to industry as a work placement, so that we are able to relate to the question of the theoretical aspect that you were taught at the college and the practical one. And that has allowed us to have colleges a latitude of partnering with quite a number of other industries in those areas. So there are also nine centers of excellence that are related to ICT. We are working with the Cisco at the present moment. Yeah. So what we are then talking about is more expansion of these interventions. But I think one of the things that we need to deal with is a societal perception. Just like if you are coming from Port Elizabeth, you are accorded a particular status. If you are coming from Moshua, you know, you are coming from Bundu. So it's there, you get my point. So it's a perception that we need to continue dealing with. But TVET College program offering would be as good as students in that area of study are also able to get work placement. And that we'll be able to achieve through partnerships that are structured between TVET colleges as well as industry. That's why honorable members could assist, especially in respect to colleges that are in rural areas, for municipalities to open up their workplaces, their technical divisions, their workshops for students from these colleges to be able to access, because these facilities are there. They are available. They may not be in abundance, but they are available. And also the surrounding farms, because other students are doing agricultural programs in these different colleges, and work placement becomes then a farm. So some farmers have actually come on board into opening up their farms. You have these students going there and do their practical training and learning. The question of corruption in respect to NEFA is under administration at the present moment. The minister has just renewed the term of the administrator up to 21st August 2020, and there are investigations that are being undertaken there. We don't want to jump the gun. There are allegations and rumors that there are some areas where corruption is taking place. The administrator is attending to those matters. We'll get reports as they become available. The question of students exchanging money instead of buying the items that they are supposed to buy
we picked it, that up, and I think NEFA is working on mechanisms to curb that kind of a practice and ensure accountability thereof in the manner in which they are distributing funds at the present moment to students. Of course, there may still be some weaknesses in that regard, but they are working on it. Certification backlog, if I may just get in, because it's one of the the TVET college sector, they are running 7 examination cycles. The ANA. Basic education is only 2, including supplemental, the ANA. TVET college, 7. And the number of subjects that get written in that particular year is around 900. All right? Basic education, the last time I checked, there were about 58 subjects that get written in a particular year. I think that context is quite important. Now, when they finish writing, they are marked. Then Umalusi and the quality assurer would look at that entire process in its chain and then certify that indeed these results could be issued. They meet all the quality tests by the quality assurer. Then students are informed that they have passed. Now, the processing of certificates is done through an IT system by State Information Technology Agency, that is SITA. Now, the first batch on students who have just passed straight without any hiccups, they are normally printed quite easily. Their system is having problems in respect to students whose marks need consolidation. What do we mean by consolidation? You write in a first year, you pass 4 subjects, you fail 3. Then you pull those subjects, and at the time you get out of the system, let's say in 5 or 6 years for a 3-year program, we have done these courses, pulling them through. Then the system is required to consolidate this to be a 1 subject. Because though we have done it over a number of years beyond its normal time, so it has to be consolidated. Now, their system is not able to consolidate. That's the problem that we're having. We are working on them together with them, and there are processes in place. The other area is when incorrect marks are submitted for a student, or they are not submitted, because there is a component of internal assessment at a college level. Then a student goes, writes exam, fine, but that component of internal assessment is outstanding. The system is struggling in consolidating that as and when it gets corrected. So those are the areas. There are some IT inefficiencies and deficiencies as well that we are working on. But it's not an excuse as government not to ensure that students do get their certification. That's why we are working quite very hard with our counterparts in the Department of Communications, because SITA is falling under them as well as SITA. One of the things that we've done is to structure fortnight meeting in order to attend to all these matters. And the backlog has been reduced quite drastically as a result of those interventions. My colleagues can comment on some other issues. Services Theatre and Limpopo, they made presentations to the portfolio committee yesterday. They were here. Maybe Mvalo can give a response there. But that area, there may be corruption. We can't deny that. But programs that are offered by CETA, they get accredited by a CETA through education quality assurance process, of which they were delegated to do that by QCTO Quality Council on Trade and Occupation. Because QCTO, as it is still in the formative stages, they didn't have that capacity to quality assure for accreditation all these programs that are offered in CETA. But now they are taking those powers that they have delegated quite gradually. Then a CETA, through its own quality assurance processes, ETQA, they would accredit the offering of a particular program and then make funding available for that. That is their process. Now, in respect to this, what has happened, and as to whether there are money that were used corruptly, we don't know as yet. There are processes trying to ascertain as to whether there have been money that perhaps were wasteful or were used corruptly by whoever. But Mr. Mvaro can clarify that because I understand he was here yesterday together with them. I was not there together with them. All right. And colleagues may feel few gaps perhaps that are left. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. Thanks, DG. Perhaps what we can do is to respond in writing in this one, because there were presentations that were done yesterday. Then we can just also finish the Senate Committee with those details, if that is in order, Honorable Chair, to the members. Thanks very much.
Fine. Did you want to comment?
Just quickly, DG. The chair asked about transformation. No, chair, it's not just about the numbers. We reached the numbers already by 2000. At any given point in the system, there are 75% black students enrolled. That is across the 26 universities. And even at the historically white institutions, on large number of them, the majority of them, the students were in majority are black students. The value of our qualification, DG has responded to that one, but you can just, we every day in the department we approve the certificates for students who want to study abroad because they need that endorsement every day. So, you know, our qualifications are recognized internationally. I will come back to Honorable Gillian on the one on the international students, whether the Western Cape is participating on that. I am not sure at this stage. And the 80% outline assurance of women and that they also must move upwards, that is what we are looking at as well. In fact, let me remind the Honorable Member's Chair that this question emanated from a report. So you can monitor that whenever we're coming back to report, because we are going to be reporting on these matters. And so then you can monitor it as well in that sense, comparing it with the previous report. The pass rate, we monitor that. We will keep on reporting on it at the universities, certainly. That's all, Chair, that was directed.
Thank you, Chief. Arun, I want to comment.
Raduji, I think you adequately covered each one of the points.
Thank you, Deji.
I just want to appreciate the concern that the cancer rate is high, and that we will present a plan to reduce the cancer. But as you explained, Chairperson, that one of the reasons is that we were advised by DPSA to move slowly in filling vacancies because of the reorganization of government that was to take place. For instance, three DDG positions where they are HRs at the moment, we had completed processes. Unfortunately, there was a decision that in view of the reorganization, there could be a lot of DDGs and DDGs that could be redundant. Therefore, the processes were halted. And secondly, the minister approved our organogram around April. We have since now drawn the list of vacancies. We are in the plan of filling those vacancies. We couldn't proceed with filling vacancies when we were busy finalizing the structure for the department. But for colleges, there is no class without a lecturer. There'll always be a lecturer who's appointed on contract in order to provide the service. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
No, sir, I was reading in the, I don't know why I call this, whether it's on WhatsApp or not. I take everything that is raised about universities and higher education very seriously. There was something about a diploma offered by University of Limpopo on funeral palaces. Honorable Gideon, your hand was up. If the members can have a second bite on that. So.
Thank you, Chairperson. My issue is very simple, Chair. I want to make it very clear that in what, no matter what meeting I am, I will always raise this question when it comes to women empowerment. If I'm looking around that side of the table, if I'm looking that side of the table, teacher, can you also give us the assurance when it comes to your organic right. department, is a woman just down there, or because I see a lot of suits here and only three ladies there, sir?
Right. No. Thanks, come back. For instance,
I also asked a question about disabilities and I haven't had any comment about it. But I think, you know, this is our second meeting. We have 5 years to go.
Yeah.
We're in this together for 5 years. But there are those basic things, you know, that whenever there's presentation, when we talk about staffing, gender issues, you know, relating to disability, we think that any presentation must tell us, you know, about those. Is there any other second bite that members could...
No, we can't.
Yeah.
Chair, I didn't get... The DJ was talking about the accommodation, but I was raising one specific issue, and they didn't give me a specific answer.
Okay, DJ, let's hear from you, but you know if we ask a specific question,
DJ,
if you may give me some chance to finish my sentence. that sometimes it will be difficult to give answers on a particular college name and area, because there might be no one coming from that area who will know that college. But in such instances, we can be favored with a report later. But where people can, you know, comment on policy matters, that when there is this, the policy says this is what we do, and then that, I think that will be fine, but the details will follow, could follow later. Over to you, DJ.
No, thank you very much. Now, in respect to North Link, they entered into a lease agreement with a service provider, and it's a matter that they are managing. But having realized this anomaly across the country, the TVET College branch is working on standardized norms for student accommodation, private accommodation, across the entire system. So that matter is receiving our attention. On the question of women empowerment, we are working on this one quite robustly. For instance, the gentleman expected you there. He has been sent here by a woman manager with a DDT. So for no, we are working on this matter. Thank you very much.
Disability?
No, on disability we have got clear policies as well as funding for the entire system. So we can just update the chair. In terms of one, employment representation, the 2%, we are quite very close the time I checked. Secondly, we've made it a point that access to our facilities and assistance with assistive devices for those students who are needing some assistance because of one form of disability or the other, our institutions are supported with that in terms of funding. There's a dedicated funding from our budget. That's the, I can tell the millions that we're putting in that area, but it's quite substantial. It's the institution, in fact, for that purpose. Yeah, and NSFAS as well. Thank you,
sir. Yeah, it will be because, you know, what is in your document, it's not talking to that. So the impression it creates is that, no, it doesn't affect you. It's one of those things that can be mentioned in person, so that if we really are in this, let's see it on paper. Can we at least have been able to assure ourselves that we get in terms of your staff complement, how many people in top management, in middle management, people with disabilities? But my emphasis here is on people with disabilities, because women are talked about in the program right through, but there's no mention of people with disabilities. But we could do both.
Right.
But you know, I was about to go. Honorable Killian.
Chairperson, and I think if you allow me, maybe the department can give us a written reply. Last week, Chair, when we went to the memorial service at the University of the Student, the devastation of our students on campus and the way they feel unsafe. I just want the department to give us maybe a report on your relationship, especially with the different departments, to give training to the students in defense you know, some of the students were like, we just need rubber spray with pepper spray, just to protect ourselves. And if maybe, if the department has a type of a plan on self-defense and all those issues that students are now longing for, if you can just send us maybe a report on that teacher. If there is a plan on this, or do you work on a plan like this?
I don't know. You mean us equipping them?
Yes.
With pepper sprays?
Not pepper sprays. I'm just making an example. I'm talking about a plan where they can protect themselves as students. Do you have something like that in the plan or pipeline?
It can't be allowed.
Won't be allowed.
Yeah, I'm just saying, no, maybe what we need to look at is the issues of safety. I think that concerns the department. Safety in universities, and but not issues like self-defense, but issues like, you know, universities will have security. What are those things that we need to look into? There are instances where we have people who are security guards and with records of rape or something like that, and or violent crimes, now they have been put at universities as security. I'm just saying, you know, what is the department do? I think that is the question. On the safety of our schools, safety of our universities. I think that is the national worry now. Yeah, I don't want us to go into that now, because we may not necessarily have necessary, because some of these things are done jointly with other institutions. Maybe in our next meeting, or even if there could be some note, you know, some paper teaching that says, yes, one question is safety of higher education institution, there are this kind of, you know, these are the policies, these are the systems that we have in place, and universities are free to can, you know, there are no, yeah, and what are the hindrances, for instance, can I maybe take this opportunity to thank all of you, the DG and your team, for this presentation, and yeah, and we thank you for all the efforts you have put to make this a success. This is still introduction for us. Yeah, it's a spending committee 101. 101 for all of you. And then the members will remain, because we're going to look at our minutes of our meeting. And, yeah, 10 minutes.